Hello and welcome to Editing Aloud. And we're going to talk a lot about Davos today, because that is where the Cyril Ramaphosa caravan has moved to this week. He's had a number of very fruitful meetings. Team SA, we're told, is reaching out to international partners at the World Economic Forum. We've had a statement today from the IMF Managing Director, Christine Lagarde, saying she's met with Cyril Ramaphosa and agreeing with him that long-term structural reforms are necessary in South Africa to turn the situation around. Hilary Joffe, is Team Cyril, let alone Team South Africa, making some progress?
Such a class act, yeah. Peter. I don't remember the International Monetary Fund Managing Director putting out a statement at the WEF welcoming sort of the South African delegation and saying,
really?
we agreed on that reforms were needed. And so I think this is quite a strong statement of support from the IMF.
After some fairly bleak economic projections.
But also, if there were doubts in a way about whether South Africa would be running to either IMF for a bailout, maybe this is a statement to say no time soon.
Yeah.
But also, the IMF will be working with South Africa to craft some sort of program to get growth going. And I think this is really a very class act on Cyril Ramaphosa's part, but also quite a strong statement that we are taking the challenges seriously, I presume, because otherwise the IMF wouldn't have gone along with all of this marketing stuff.
Well, it so happens that we have our man in Davos, along with Team South Africa, Tim Cohen, Business Day editor, and he's on the line, I believe. Tim, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hello. Hi. Listen, I'm not going to interview you just on my own for the next few minutes. I'm going to leave it to the panel to do it. But do you get the impression Cyril is doing well?
Yes, I do. I mean, you know, we're a blip in this event. There's a new prime minister of Zimbabwe, of Angola. There's a huge delegation from Saudi Arabia. And of course, the whole thing is overshadowed by the speech that Donald Trump is going to make on Friday. So, you know, it's not as though, you know, we're the whole focus is on South Africa.
Panel, please go ahead and ask.
What is the message that
talk to camera three, if you don't mind? There we go. Yeah,
Tim, what is the message that Cyril Ramaphosa is trying to get across here?
Well, I just think he wants to reestablish the old South African way. You know, that we are a bridge builder, that we are difficult position, that we are still heading in the right direction, and that we're going to clean up. You know, so and I think also to assure people that South Africa is taking it seriously, is dedicated to fixing them.
Is there, Tim, a plan perhaps to meet Donald Trump and the Chinese president?
No, you know, I asked Cyril whether he would be prepared to meet with Trump, and he said, well, you know, I don't know. Well, it depends on our schedules and whether we can, what we're going to talk about. But he basically said he would. You know, if the Trump people want to meet, then he would be available.
And what's your impression? And what's your impression of his of Cyril's interactions with his finance minister Marius Kigaba?
You know, just by the way, also the Chinese premier, he is not here this year. But extraordinarily, the leaders of zillions of countries have turned out making a speech. The note was given by Modi, the Prime Minister of India, the Prime Minister of Canada.
Tim, listen, mate, thank you very much. Your line is very bad. We can't, you're breaking up a lot. We're going to leave you to the snow and your hat. Thanks for coming through, and we hope you're back at the table with us next week. Have a good time. Meanwhile, panel, there are so many inquiries going on now, I've kind of lost track of them. So we've got ESCOM in front of a committee. We have Transnet in front of another committee. Batabile Dlamini is facing being questioned by somebody, I don't even know. Is there any point to any of these things any longer? I mean, this is a parliament that's got surely a limited life left, Raymond. Why would you bother with these inquiries, knowing that you've probably got a new president coming in, a new cabinet, within a few days or weeks, months?
Well, because I think that's what Parliament should be doing. I mean, it's it's fantastic actually. You know, there's a backbencher called Pravin Gordhan, who asks really difficult questions and knows what he's talking about, because he used to be the finance minister. Yeah. And it's wonderful. I think it's very good for South Africa to see MPs doing this. But it illustrates how the whole power game has just shifted.
Yeah.
Everybody's now trying to prove that they're not part of this conspiracy by being, independent.
But can I just ask then, wouldn't that be best done in front of a judge who's actually going to say, well, I believe you and not you. You're going to jail. You get off.
But that's surely the point.
To bring it to the boil rather than to leave. You know, Anosh Singh was in front of the ESCOM inquiry yesterday. He lied through his teeth the whole time. Very, very effective. A very accomplished liar. And nothing happens to him. You know, there are no manacles.
But something might. In a way what Ray's saying. But is that under a new leadership, the point is that these inquiries may lay the ground for criminal action to be taken. And they've done a lot of the groundwork now. And if our law enforcement authorities get back into doing what they're supposed to be doing, this could have, we hope, consequences.
And then there is the commission coming into state capture under Deputy Chief Justice Zonda. So what's happening here is that Anuj Singh and these people are putting a lot of stuff on the record that they're going to have, they're providing, I think, a platform for some very clever lawyers at this commission to start unpacking their stories.
Right.
And I think it's very useful that they're doing this now in Parliament because, testifying in Parliament, if you lie in Parliament, it's a criminal offence. I mean, it's pretty grave. It's
bad. So saying I don't remember is not a lie, really. You just it's a way of weaseling out.
Well, it is a lie saying you don't remember when
you do
remember.
Yes.
It is a lie. But what you are talking about now, these are between two different arms of the government.
Yeah.
The justice system is separate from the legislative system, which is Parliament. The reason you have seen no action on the criminal proceedings on the front there is because the law enforcement agencies have been captured and indeed there are people there whose job is to make sure that no one ever investigates and prosecute anything.
Yeah.
But it's great now that the Parliament, particularly members of the ruling party, are finally doing the job we've been paying them to do. The past 8 years they've been doing absolutely nothing. Now it's great for that they have finally woken up, and that's due to the changes in the party dynamics in the party.
Yeah. But as he watches, which I presume he must, or somebody must be giving him a praise here, what is Jacob Zuma doing? Because he must be looking at the Anuj Singh thing, and he'll probably watch Coco tonight. He must, surely every time that they slip up or lie or don't remember, or whatever it might be, he must think, I've just got to stay in longer because I've got more ins to tie up. I mean, none of what they're saying is necessarily helping him helping ease him out of office.
I don't think that he can tie up any ends now. I think his speeches are written for him by others. I don't think he can make appointments, without the approval of Lithuli House. So there's very little action that Jacob Zuma can take as president now.
Other than not leave, I presume.
Well, not leaving is, it's inevitable that he will. So
not leaving now when they instruct him to leave is actually digging his own grave even deeper.
Yeah.
Because They can force him out either through a vote of no confidence in parliament. And you saw when he was still in charge of the ANC, he just won by the skin of his teeth.
Margin, yeah.
Yes, but that's still not the worst possible outcome for him. There could be the impeachment process, which makes him lose all his benefit. But even that is not the worst possible outcome for him. The worst possible outcome are the charges. Forget the old ones. There's many new charges that Jacob Zuma has to face, including treason, because that's what it is. If you undermine the institutions of the state, let's take ESCOM as an example. ESCOM has been crippled deliberately, and they now on the record is evidence that Jacob Zuma himself participated for the benefit of some foreign interests. That is the definition of treason, and the president would never escape that if it is proven. But forget even that. We still are short 5 billion rand in the Transnet affairs, the trains in China.
If you believe in the sort of theory that sort of, you know, I can't remember who said it, might have been Harold Macmillan, the events, you know, what shapes history, events, and you know, if you were Zuma, you would basically, and you know how much trouble you're in, you know what's out there facing you. The moment you have no power, you've got no power. That's it. Other people can do what they want with you and with all of your friends. You would stay there surely as long as you possibly can.
You would, except he can't at this point. And his biggest problem is that he's the biggest fish. Everyone will be exchanging him for their own freedom. They'll say, oh, bleep again. Now I'll tell you everything. You know that 5 billion rand that we left behind in China for the Guptas, actually X amount went to the president because the president instructed us to do this and that and that and that. From ESCOM alone, over the past 5 years, about 140 billion rand has been stolen.
Yeah.
That money just didn't work out. Someone gave instructions and it goes all the way to the top. The president's
Presumably at some stage will be telling stories about everybody else. I mean, it'll be dog eats dog.
That's
going to happen. Surely that's going to happen in a court of law under cross examination, rather than in an general inquiry with a, you know, which is sort of with no powers of imprisonment.
You are right, but the point you are making is that these are two separate processes, and they can run concurrently. The fact that there's something happening in Parliament does not mean there should be nothing happening in the criminal justice system.
So, with raison d'etre running a commission of inquiry, there's nothing to prevent eventually a proper police service arresting Iqbal Sharma or Marcello Cocco and charging them with whatever criminal activities or fraud. They can do that.
They can do that, and there's mountains of evidence in this building. We had mountains of evidence and we put it all out there.
Yeah.
The reason there's been no prosecution is because the law enforcement agencies have been refusing to do their job because they've been taking instructions from Jacob Zuma, the suspect.
So what was it? How do you explain the sort of brief flurry from the asset forfeiture unit then attaching some of the assets that the Guptas were involved with?
I think that's Sean Abrahams trying to demonstrate that he is actually doing something.
Right.
Because he fears that coming down the line is his firing, his sacking in one way or another.
Yeah.
And that he would then need to go to court and try and explain why he shouldn't be fired.
I have a different view of it. I think that if you looked at the dates, the work was done last year by the asset forfeiture unit.
But it was only
But they had the orders.
Yeah.
And once they had the political cover, they went public with it straight away. So there still are good people there.
It shows
just
you exactly who has been obstructing justice in this country and abetting all this crime, like massive theft.
We're going to come back and we'll talk about some more after this break. Welcome back. Panel, just to wrap up the conversation we were having before the break, Cyril obviously comes back later this week. Whatever he does, he does. Where are the Guptas and where is Dudazani Zuma? Does anybody know for sure? You've got a bit about them in the magazine.
Well, in this great magazine called The Financial Mail, we're telling you that their plane, the Gulfstream, is grounded in Switzerland.
Yeah.
One, because the export.
It apparently moved from Zurich to Bern for some reason.
Yes, and then came back.
Okay.
It's now there in Switzerland in some small airport there. Oh. It's been grounded, one, because the Export-Import Bank of Canada, oh, which financed the thing, has not been receiving installment for about 6 months,
yeah,
since around May. It's not been, the Guptas have not been paying. But another thing now, which makes their life even more difficult, the NPA in that 220 million rand for the Vrede dairy farm,
yeah,
30 million rand of that was transferred directly to the Guptas,
yeah,
who then used to pay a down payment of 30 million
on the
rand
plane.
On the plane.
Yeah.
So it's the proceeds of crime.
Yeah.
And of course, even if it were not the proceeds of crime,
so who's attached it? Us or somebody else?
The Canadians have grounded it.
Okay.
So now between the South Africans and the Canadians, yeah, I don't know how that, yeah, arrangement is going to work.
Can
because
I ask
all
that, Ray? I mean, you've edited the Sunday Times. You've had this massive audience out there, this big sort of, you know, club to wield on a Sunday. Surely a paper with resources would have people in Dubai taking photographs of these people. I mean, they can't be living inside yet another compound. They'll go out somewhere every now and again. Why can't we get photographs of the Guptas and Dudazani in Dubai now, tomorrow?
I don't know. You'd have to ask
the
Sunday Times.
I understand that.
I think that's an excellent idea for the news diary of the Sunday Times.
Would that have been possible in your day?
I think it might have been.
Yeah.
It depends
these things cost money.
How protected they are in Dubai.
Yeah.
Because it's not a place that you could necessarily easily go and get somebody close to somebody's private residence and photograph them. They have the right help from above.
Yeah.
But coming and going, certainly.
Yeah. Panel, there have been other inquiries. We've got Transnet, which is trying to establish what exactly, Sukhanati, what is the Transnet inquiry about? Is it once again about corruption, theft, or I've lost track of it.
Peter, I can't keep up. I really don't know what that one is all about.
All
Hillary probably knows better.
Yeah. I had a look, and I'm no expert, but it's the SCOPA. Public accounts. It's the failure to account to the Committee on Public Accounts on a series of apparent instances of wrongdoing and poor tendering and so on. And Transnet simply failed to account and didn't provide information
but
that the committee had requested.
Once again, Lynn Brown, who probably the word is not to be taken all that seriously anymore, but I mean, she's saying that Transnet is one of the, you know, is one of the best of the state-owned companies, and yet it still finds itself in trouble.
It's going to be the next one to go.
Would she know best if it hit her?
I don't know.
I think there's all sorts of, I mean, even in Brad Molefe's time, he was at Transnet before he was at Eskom. I mean, I'm sure there was already some procurement stuff going down. So it's been under the radar screen, but it could deserve to be
Raymond, your namesake, Raymond Zondo, has got to convene this inquiry into state capture. The president has yet not yet, or presidency has not yet produced terms of reference for it. Is that a deliberate delay, do you think, or is it at some sort of technical hitch in getting the terms of reference out so that the inquiry can begin?
Well, I think that some members of the Zuma camp have said that they believe these terms of reference should be broad beyond just the Guptas, and any businessman who's ever tried to influence government should be included in a broad inquiry.
Yeah.
And Judge Zondo,
300 years or something.
But Judge Zondo's press conference yesterday, he was quite clear that he expects these terms of reference to, you know, be produced promptly and to relate to the public protector's inquiry.
Tuli Madonsela's.
And then
he
made a comment which was quite interesting, which is that you know, that once this is done, should there be no legal challenges to these terms of reference, the commission will go ahead.
Right.
So almost anticipating that they might be handed some kind of weird set of terms of reference. The Justice Minister saying on radio that he hasn't produced them because he's waiting for a slot at the government printer. which is extraordinary.
It was quite clear yesterday as well that these terms of reference have been dealt with in the public protector's report.
Yeah.
So it's what in there. And the good thing about having a judge like him is that he will say, no, Mr. President, the terms of reference are as directed by the state of capture report.
This is a commission triggered by that report.
Yes.
And it has to contain itself to what is in that report.
And the judge has already said.
And the judge has already said it.
He said these terms
can you
will
imagine,
be on that.
Can you imagine the meetings going on about how to get around that in the presidency? We've got a picture up on our panel today of a famous painting done in 1902 by Theophile Steinlen, which, if you're one of Cape Town's better art collectors, you probably recognize. And it comes back to the water crisis. I deliberately chose it because it shows a woman washing herself from a bowl, which probably contains 2, maybe 3 liters of water, which would have been common in Paris in 1902. Not so common in big cities like Paris and Cape Town now. But Helen Ziller wrote an article on the Maverick website the other day about the water crisis, which really, for the first time for me, really brought home what we're in for here. I mean, there will literally be no water, and thousands of people wanting it. It's a serious.
It's terrifying.
It's a serious thing, and there's no stop. There's no way to make it better.
Yeah.
What's
I mean, and she's actually a big part of the plan because she's now taken charge. A big part of the plan is actually intelligence and security related.
Yeah.
To actually identify potential unrest, how it might happen, how it might spread, how it might be contained.
It was amazing.
How they'll get on top of, I mean, it's quite a frightening scenario that's being painted.
Now imagine a water spot and 30,000 people descending on it because they haven't had any water.
It's quite horrible. You see, in the Transkei, we still bath like the lady does at my home.
Yeah.
But the difference
it's
is
perfectly possible too. Actually, to
That's what I was doing now in December and in January.
Yeah.
But the difference is that I've got a water tank, 7,500 liters of water, and I've got streams with water running.
Yeah.
Now imagine that in the township of Kuguletu, for example, with hundreds of thousands of people all with no water.
Yeah.
It's I just cannot describe the matter. Forget the security situation. Talk about the health hazards of the
whole thing. Both. I mean the worse the health hazard becomes, the more the crime or the public security aspect increases.
And how this was not foreseen even by the Democratic Alliance, which is governing there, is beyond me. I don't know. I'm sure there
have
are
they made
no plans whatsoever that I am aware of. They are not talking about plans. They are talking about day zero.
Yeah.
They are not talking about how to alleviate it.
Yeah. I Googled just out of interest the other day, mobile desalination plants, and there are dozens of them in South Africa, that companies that can provide you with desalination and provide lots of water. But desalination doesn't seem to have really featured as a.
People were trying to sell the city of Cape Town desalination plants years ago, and national government was turning it down, especially if it was Israeli technology, because they're the leaders, the world leaders in desalination. But certainly 7-10 years ago, there were certainly people who were already foreseeing this and looking at options such as desalination plants, optimizing water use so that,
why would you turn down a desalination plant? What does it do?
Well, the money apparently was one issue, national government not necessarily coughing up. I suppose.
I mean, quite an interesting.
Politics was another. I think this is it's a terrible example of how political divides intersected with, poor municipal planning to create a crisis, really.
What does this do to the DA, right?
I think what it demonstrates is that, the DA managed to create an image of itself as being this growing, united, forward, advancing force. And actually, now that the cover's been taken off, it's very fractured. The city council, the Cork City Council caucus is split. The mayor doesn't have the support of the premier. The premier and the national leader, and the premier is acting like a national leader. Musi Maimane is only going to make a statement on this long after she issued her massive intervention. It looks like a party that's fracturing, and I would be very concerned if I was the DA, because public sentiment built on the idea of good, effective governance.
That's been the message of the last 10 years. Basically, you know, we are good managers.
No, I don't think national government has been helpful.
The fact that the DA can get to this point, we're now 3 months away from literally no water, is quite something. And it's also quite something that it's taken a Helen Zille to step through the curtains and say, this show is not over yet. This is what we're going to do. Not the leader of the party, not the mayor of Cape Town, but the leader of the province.
She cannot claim too much credit. She was mayor of that city. And what did she do about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if there is no desalination option in Cape Town, it just sounds to me to be crazy. I mean, from the moment the El Nino phenomenon became well known, it became also equally well known at the west coasts of places like Africa and Latin America and Australia were going to be dry. Mm. And surely that would have been the way to go, to begin storing water, desalinated water, in huge tanks underground. So these dams that when they dry are not the end of hope. These are shallow dams anyway. I mean, there's the one outside Worcester, the main one, I can't remember what it's called. Stretches 4 miles. It can take you an hour to drive, you know, longer to get when you want to go. It's a shallow, big evaporation pan, basically.
As a country, I think we seem to need a crisis to trigger political and focus on issues. So this time it's water, and water could become an issue in Gauteng as well in the not too distant future. Yeah. So I don't know how this one's going to enjoy, but definitely in the future, in the next few years. So I don't know how this one is going to be resolved. I wish I had some ideas to help with, but I certainly hope that as a country we now start taking water issues seriously.
In a way, it's a bit like the housing crisis, you know, or the land problem. I mean, these things all have solutions of sorts, all of which could provide huge economic wins for the country generally. What if we went and built, you know, storage around the country for a gazillion gallons of water? Or what if we just went and built properly and decided, like the Chinese do, we're going to build a city here now, and built it so that people don't have to commute 5 hours to Joburg every day to come and work. I mean, all of this stuff just takes a bit of vision and
but
guts.
It also takes financial resources. And quite an interesting part of what Helen Zille did there was to call on the national government to declare this a drought disaster.
Yeah.
That then paves the way for a whole lot of financial moves to be made and move resources around.
Cyril Ramaphosa comes back from Davos soon. I guarantee you, within a few hours of his arrival, disaster area will be declared in the Cape. He will finally get something going. Thank you very much for listening to us. We'll be back next week.